We are continuing in the study of the book of Deuteronomy. The Hebrews would have called it the book of words. And as we begin to look more in depth into this book, you'll see why. The Hebrew tradition was to name the book after the first major word in that book. And in this case, it is words. And so we have the book of words. Deuteronomy is a very important book in the culture of in Jewish culture. I don't know if you remember when the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, a copy of the book of Deuteronomy was found, and it is a national treasure in Israel, and it is a very important book, the book of Deuteronomy. And we have been up through chapter 3 at this point. It has been review. It has been a little bit of warning, and so they in chapter 3, they recount some conquests that they have done, some reminders of some things. Oh yeah, people died when they did this, and so there were some reminders. We are dealing with the next generation. We're dealing with a new generation, and we'll see that more and more. Some things that you might want to pay attention to as we go through this, pay attention to the words he says, you have seen and you have heard. You have seen and you have heard over and over again. So he's talking about the physical aspects of in the presence of God and the things that God has done. And we'll get some other phrases, but you'll see that more and more as we go through this book. And so he's dealing with the people who have come out of Egypt and the ones that survived the desert and have made it through. And so in chapter 4, we'll start in chapter 4 this morning. He says, Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I am teaching you to perform, so that you may live and go and take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. And so chapter 4, verses 1 through 24, we're giving an appeal to experiences. Here's some things that have happened, and he's appealing to that. And chapter verse 2 is the first time we see this. You shall not add to the word which I am commanding you, nor take away from it. And so this concept, don't add or take away. You can write out there Revelation 22:18 as far as another place we see that concept. Don't add to or take away. This is pure, undefiled. Just leave it as it is. But we have a tendency to not listen to that sometimes. Here's this warning. And again in verse 3, your eyes have seen what the Lord has done in the case of Baal Peor. And the men who follow Baal Peor, the Lord your God has destroyed them from among you. But you, and this is important, verse 4, you held fast to the Lord your God and are alive today, every one of you. So we're dealing with the faithful. We're dealing with the ones that survived the desert, that have been through all that. And do you remember where they are right now? Where are they physically at this point where Moses is going to be giving these four speeches? Where are they physically right now? Yeah, they're just right outside the promised land. They're in that area that they've conquered on the east side of the Jordan, basically directly across from Jericho. And Moses is giving them these addresses. This book covers about a 40-day period. From the beginning of the book until they go into Jerusalem is about 70 days. But the book covers about a 30-day period or 40-day period when he's giving these four addresses. And so here is this address. And he's telling them, you are the ones that are faithful. Look down in verse 7. It says, and this is an interesting concept. For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord your God whenever we call on him? Or what great nation is there that has statutes and judgments as righteous as the whole law which I am setting before you today? Tell me, is his question. What nation is there that is like this? And we'll see this later on this morning when he appeals to us. This has never happened before. What you're experiencing has never happened before. What great nation is like this? And what great nation is defined with righteous statutes and righteous judgments. And so this is Proverbs 14:34 says, righteousness exalts a nation. Proverbs 14:34. I will just confess to you as we go through this, it is going to be very difficult to not pause. There's so much in the book of Deuteronomy that we will not have time to cover in depth. And so many areas where I was just like, oh, this is a really cool study, but we don't have time to go into it. So if you wanted to, another thing is to look and do a little search. And how many times does he say, keep your soul or keep your watch diligently for your soul, as he says in verse 9? There's a lot of different times where he's talking about this. He's warning them, don't forsake God over and over and over and over again in this book. And you'll see this over and over and over again. But in verse 9 and 10, he says, only give heed to yourself, keep your soul diligently, so that you do not forget the things which your eyes have seen. And this is another word that's used, or another phrase, do not forget. Do not forget. And we'll look at that in just a second. And this is the first time you see it here in this book. Do not forget what your eyes have seen, and they do not depart from your heart all the days of your life, but make them known to your sons and your grandsons. Remember the day you stood before the Lord your God at Horeb. Remember Horeb. So here is, and again, we'll look at this. They're going to do this again. Tell them to your sons and your grandsons. We're going to see this. Pass this on. This is something that's personal for you. Remember this. Remember this, but pass it on. And so it's very, very important that they're passing this on. And in chapter verse 10, he says, remember the day you stood before the Lord your God at Horeb. And they use remember Horeb, and you would remember Sinai. Remember Mount Sinai? What happened at Mount Sinai that they trembled so much?
They heard the Lord.
Yes. They heard the Lord. Do you remember the scenario? Do you remember kind of what happened at Sinai? Yes, that is what's happening. And we're going to see that several times in this book. Remember when you saw what as close to what the image of God that there was. And we'll look at that in just a second. So remember Horeb. And he appeals to them in this section. Remember the giving of the law. Remember that. Remember the fear of the Lord, and remember to teach your children. Remember, remember, remember. Do not forget. And we'll talk about in a little bit why they might forget. But remember Horeb. Remember the giving of the law. I like to think of, in my mind, as far as, because it was a fearful thing. And in my mind, when I see Mount Sinai, I go to J.R. Tolkien's Mount Doom, and, you know, maybe some of you haven't seen the movies, but anyway, that's my image of Mount Sinai, this fearful thing that was trembling, this mountain that you couldn't touch or you would die, and this voice coming out of it. And so, in verse 15, he says, so watch yourselves carefully, since you did not see any form on the day the Lord spoke to you at Horeb from amidst the fire. And so in this section, 15 through 20, he begins talking about do not make any forms to worship. Don't make any idols to worship. He says, when you saw God, or when you were in the presence of God and you heard Him, God did not give them any form to worship. He didn't present Himself in any image to be worshipped. In this section, he says, don't make any human forms, verse 16. He says, don't make any forms from nature, verses 17 and 18. And don't make any forms from the heavens. He said, God did not give you any forms to be worshipped. And so do not worship. He physically, and that's, you know, we wonder why haven't we seen God? Moses is really the closest one to get to see God. Why haven't we seen God? And this is one reason, because I don't want you worshiping an idol. I don't want you making an image after what you've seen and worshiping that image. And we talked about the serpent. Remember the serpent in the wilderness? That bronze serpent that was raised up and they looked on it? Do you remember how long they kept that before it was destroyed? It was hundreds of years they kept that statue. And it wasn't destroyed until the, I believe it was King Josiah or later on that they actually destroyed that bronze serpent. And that wasn't even God. Yes, sir? With the background not becoming worshipful to. Yes, well, yeah, and you know the background is Egypt, and the things that they saw in Egypt, and so the wilderness period is a lot of that is getting Egypt out of the people, and so yeah, for some reason they had a tendency to worship things. Of course, we don't do that today, but anyway, so here is. Here it says, don't worship any form. Don't worship anything. But he says in verse 20, but the Lord has spoken, has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace from Egypt to be a possession for his, or to be a people for his own possession as today. So he talks about Egypt as being an iron furnace. And he says, he's taken you out of the iron furnace to be his own possession. Don't worship anything else because you were bought and you are his. You don't need to be worshiping anything else. He's taken you out of that. He's done the things he needed to do at that time. In verses 21 through 24, Moses recants for the third time his not going into the land. This is the third time he mentions, I'm not going to go into land. I'm not going to be able to make it. Okay, he says, now the Lord was angry with me on your account. I think he kind of throws that in there. He says that more than once. God was angry at me because of you guys. Not really, but I mean, I'm just assuming on what's being said here. But he says, he's not going to enter into that good land. Then he says, don't do what I've done. He's going to die. But you yourselves watch and do not forget. Here's that. Do not forget. Do not forget. Do not forget. Over and over again. And verse 24, for the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. And you can write out beside that Hebrews 12, 29. The writer of Hebrews recants this at that time. Hebrews 12, 29. 25 through 31, where we have an appeal to warning. We get some warnings here in this chapter. And he says, when you become the father of children and children's children and have remained long in the land and act corruptly and make an idol in the form of anything and do that which is evil in the sight of the Lord your God as to provoke him in anger, I call heaven and earth as a witness against you. And so he's saying everything is witnessing against you as far as remembering the covenant that you made. And again, this concept of a future generation. So when you have children and children's children, when you have kids and grandkids, and you've acted in a way you shouldn't, I'm going to call heaven and earth as witness against you. And so that's quite a strong thing. In verse 27, he says, "The Lord will scatter you among the peoples." Nehemiah 1:8, Nehemiah prays and says, we have been scattered. Nehemiah 1:8. And he did that very thing. With the Assyrians and the Babylonians, he did scatter them. Verse 28, there you will serve gods and the work of man's hands, wood and stone, which neither see, nor hear, nor eat, nor smell. What is he putting emphasis on when he says neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell? They're not alive. We serve a living God. We serve a living God, not anything made with hands. So he's drawing contrast here. In verse 31, for the Lord your God is compassionate, a compassionate God. He will not fail nor destroy you nor forget the covenant which your fathers have made with him. He's telling the people over and over again, do not forget. Do not forget. And in this situation, he's saying God will never forget. God's not going to forget the covenant that was made. You better not forget your part of that covenant and your relationship with God. He says this 9 times in the book of Deuteronomy. Do not forget. Do not forget. And so verse 32 through 43, an appeal to relationship. And this is really interesting here. As I said, we were going to look at this. An appeal to a relationship that they have with God that nobody else has. And he says in verse 32, indeed, ask now concerning the former days which were before you, since the day that God created man on earth, and inquire from one end of the heavens to the other, and ask, has anything been done like this great thing, or has anything been heard like it? In relationship to the relationship that God has with the people at that time, he says, ask the whole world. Ask from time when time started until now, ask everybody, has anything ever been done like this? And the answer is no. Nothing has been done. There has never been, God had never been this close to him. Yes. Yes, exactly. And that's right. And you know, as you read this, you're wondering how can they really stray from this? You know, you just got to do what God says, really. And you're exactly right. And even and using the relationship between us and our children, God even says, "I brought you out of Egypt as dear like children." And in other passages in the prophets, he talks about, "I taught Ephraim how to walk," you know, by holding his hands. And so that image is there. And as we read this, and we say, "Well, you know, how in the world could you really not see this?" And when we read the Bible, we need to think the very same thing. How could anyone read the Bible and see all that God has done from before man was even made? He knew the sacrifice. He knew the cost when he said, when he spoke into creation light, he knew it would cost him his son. But he did it anyway. So you're exactly right. It is an extreme story as far as relationship. And you see here in this situation that he says nothing's been done like this. You have a relationship with God in this time that nobody else has had. We won't take the time to read all of this, but he said, "I spoke to you from the midst of fire, and he's been with you this whole time." And he says, verse 35: "To you it was shown that you might know that the Lord, He is God, and there is no other besides Him. Out of the heavens He let you hear His voice to discipline you on the earth, and He let you see His great fire, and you heard His words from the midst of the fire, because He loved your fathers before He chose their descendants after them, and He personally brought you from Egypt by His great power." And so over and over and over again in this section, he's emphasizing God being close to them, God having that relationship with them, and they're sitting there on the edge of the Jordan, figuratively, ready to take this land. And he's you know, I imagine Moses, if he could take all of the people and put his hands on the side of their cheeks and say, "Do not forget, do not forget, don't forget what's going on," and because he's not going to get to go in there with them, he's not going to go in there and be able to get onto them when they've forgotten. And so he's screaming at them, "Do not forget. Here's this great relationship that you have. And that God was driving nations out before you." In verse 39, "Know therefore today and take it to your heart." Take it to your heart. Where does this need to be? In your heart. And we've seen this already, and you'll see it over and over again. Put this in your heart. "That the Lord, He is God in heaven above and on earth below." There's no other. There's no other. Do not forget. And put this in your heart, because if you don't put this in your heart, something else will get in there. Something else will get in there. So make sure that this is there. And in verse 40, so you shall keep His statutes and His commandments, which I am giving to you to this day, that it may go well with you. That it may go well with you. Do we use that phrase, really? That it may go well with you? What is he saying here in this situation? What do you think he's saying? What is he trying to communicate to them?
It's a
It is a warning. It is a warning. And it happens 11 times in this book, that it may go well with you. 11 times. That it may go well or be well in the book of Deuteronomy. You know, we see that in Ephesians when it talks about respecting your parents because it's the first law with a commandment, that it may be well with you. It's so you don't die, really. Because everybody else that died before is a testament to the fact that it didn't go so well for them. When they disobeyed the statutes and the commandments. Statutes and commandments, as they keep saying those two things, commandments are, this is what God has said. Commandments are Exodus 20 and the Ten Commandments. We're going to see those in just a second. Exodus or Leviticus, those are commandments. Statutes are judgments that have been passed. For example, when we talked about the ladies inheriting land, but they had to marry inside the tribe, those are statutes, for example. So statutes and commandments, or judgments and commandments that are being said over and over again, do not forget them, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, and that you may live long on the land which the Lord your God is giving you for all time. The nation of Israel loves this passage. Why would the nation of Israel love this passage today, the nation of Israel?
Because they think they still own the land.
It's our land. You can't take it from us, even though your temple's right on our holy mountain. But anyway, it's our land, right? Anyway. So they love this passage. And again, Deuteronomy is a very important book to the Jewish nations. And it goes in 41 through 43. We get a message of which cities were going to be the cities of refuge on that side of Jordan, and in verses 44 through 49 we have a general announcement. Pay attention to what's about to be said, and it gives a place about where they are again, and gives a stamp of where they are. So that sums up chapter 4, and we got to hurry along. Chapter 5, we begin the second address. So chapter 1 through 4 is the first address. Chapter 5 through 26 is going to be the second address that Moses gives to the people. And in chapter 5, we have the Ten Commandments given to us again. A reaffirmation of the Ten Commandments. In case you were little kids, whenever the message was given, you know, in Exodus 20, here's the message again, okay? So here's the message again. And so he goes through and talks about Horeb in verse 2, talks about the covenant. You can run out there beside that, Exodus 19:5. And he says, the Lord spoke to you face to face at the mountain in the midst of the fire. And so again, this emphasis, remember Horeb. Remember when God was on, you know, spoke to you this way. And he says, I am the Lord that God brought you out of Egypt, out of slavery. And so you have the first commandment in verse 7. And I'm going to give you, when we talk about the Ten Commandments, and you talk to your religious friends about the Ten Commandments, those are, you know, as long as you follow the Ten Commandments and believe in Jesus, the general populace thinks you're going to be just, you're in like Flynn, right? If you do the Ten Commandments and you believe in Jesus, you're good. Not so much, but the Ten Commandments, when we look at them, are they still in effect today? The Ten Commandments. All except the Sabbath, yes. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. So yes, all except for the Sabbath, those they're still in effect. Matthew 10:4, Luke 4:8, you shall have no other gods before me. If you want to write these down, that's Matthew 4:10 and Luke 4:8. Verse 7, you shall have no other gods before me. 8, you shall not make for yourself an idol. Acts 17:29 and 30. Acts 17:29 and 30 and 1 John 3:21. Verse 11, you shall not make the name or take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Matthew 6, 9, Matthew 12, 36, Matthew 6, 9, and 12, 36, and 1 Timothy 6, 1. You shall not take the name of your Lord God in vain. What does it mean to take the Lord in vain? In vano, as we'd say in Spanish. What'd you say? Yes, that's. Did you hear that? Not treating it holy. It's taking a holy thing and treating it like a common name or common thing. And you see that in texts. You see that all the time. And I just want to throttle people, seriously. One part of it is because they don't know God. If you knew God, you wouldn't just throw his name around like that. Okay? That's part of it. Part of it, they have no respect for things that are holy. Holiness is a concept that is estranged from people nowadays, mostly. And so that's part of it. So making a holy thing and making it common. I was actually reading through some Hebrew or Jewish documents recently and studying for this. And one of them said, the name of God is on this paper. Treat it with respect. Like, that's kind of cool. That's this right here. Do not, what does it say? You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. For the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. Just saying. Then it may go well with you. All right? So keep that in mind. And so, four, observe the Sabbath day and keep it. Verse 12. Now, when people say, well, people observe the Sabbath, Jesus observed the Sabbath, you are exactly right. Jesus did observe the Sabbath because Jesus was a Jew. All right? There were no Christians when Jesus, before Jesus died on the cross, there were no Christians. So they were Jews. They observed the Sabbath. And then they say, well, Paul went to the tabernacle, to the Sabbath meetings, and he went to the synagogues, and so, you know, that means, as was his custom, it says in Acts, and so that means that, you know, you need to observe the Sabbath. What was Paul doing? Why did he say he was doing that?
To teach them.
He even had Timothy circumcised, so Timothy could go in there, and Timothy's like, all right, I guess. You know, so, you know, it is because he was reaching the people. It was his custom to go in there and teach them. And so there would be a public reading of the law. And because of who he was, studied under Gamaliel, he's like a superstar. You know, let's have him read, okay? And so he gets up and reads. And what does he do? He preaches at them, right? Like any good gospel preacher would. And so that's why he went there. That's why he did that. It wasn't because it was a religious thing he was obeying, as some would teach today. Is because he was trying to reach them with the gospel, and that's where they would be. And so that's why he did that. It is not because he was keeping the Sabbath, as is commanded here. Verse 16, honor your father and mother. Love this one. Matthew 19, 19. Romans 1, 29 through 32. Matthew 19, 19. Romans 1, 29 through 32. And Ephesians 6, 1 through 3. Ephesians 6, 1 through 3. Those are nailed on my wall somewhere. All right. 17, you shall not murder. That's pretty standard, right? 1 John 3, 14 and 15. Matthew 10, 19. 1 Peter 4, 15. 1 Peter 4, 15. Do y'all know the trick whenever somebody's telling you, just throwing out Bible verses? Do you know the trick to remember to write them down correctly? Write the numbers down first. Then if you have to go back and find it, you only got 66 books to really, you know, to find out. So write the numbers down and then go back and write the PT or whatever you do for your abbreviations. I had to learn that in preaching school because I got lost not knowing that trick. So Matthew 10, 19, 1 Peter 4, 15, and 1 John 3, 14 and 15 for not murdering. Don't kill folk. You shall not commit adultery, Matthew 19, 18. 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10. 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10. And Hebrews 13, 4. Hebrews 13, 4. You shall not steal, Mark 10, 19. Ephesians 4:28. Mark 10:19, Ephesians 4:28. You shall not bear false witness. I think that's Mark. Mark 18:20. Mark 18:20. And Ephesians 4:25. And you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, and you shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, his male servant, or any of his stuff. Luke 12:15. Ephesians 5:3. Ephesians 5:3, and Hebrews 13:5. So the Ten Commandments, there are nine of them that, you know, they're still good stuff. You know, we still need to do those. One of them we do not, because it was part of an old covenant, an Old Testament. Which, by the way, if you're studying with Jews, don't ask them to study the Old Testament. They will tell you, for some of us, it's not that old. It's still in effect for some of the people. But anyway, I'm sure that won't happen. Verse 22, we start this another section where we're remembering the mountain, remembering Horeb. And the words, these words the Lord spoke to you in your assembly in the mountain from the midst of the fire and the cloud and the thick gloom, which a great voice he added to added no more. He wrote them on two tablets of stone and gave them to me. And when you heard the voice from the midst of the darkness and while the mountain was burning, you basically got scared and said, we can't handle it anymore. And so this is, again, he's going through, remember that great mountain. Hebrews 12:18-24 goes through the same kind of thing. But in Hebrews, they tell us, you don't have the mountain, you don't have Mount Doom, okay? In Hebrews 12, you don't have Mount Doom. We've been given a holy mountain, Mount Zion. Now, if you want to continue the J.R. Tolkien analogy, we've been given the Elfin Kingdom. But that's not really what it is there. But he's saying we have been something that's even more precious and beautiful, something you want to approach. We don't have fear on this mountain. We don't have this dark and gloomy mountain. We have Mount Zion, a heavenly mountain. And so we have, again, Hebrews, the book of better things. We have a better mountain in Hebrews 12, 18 through 24. Again, we don't have time to go through that because we're running out of time. In verse 25, now then, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us. God is a consuming fire, as we read earlier in the end of chapter 4, right? God is a consuming fire. And the only image the people were given of God in that doom, in that mountain, is fire. It's really the only image. And so when we think about God as a consuming fire, it is not necessarily that when they say God is a consuming fire, it is not necessarily that God is this thing just an eater of people. He is not just a fire that, and it is not just his wrath, but that's what they saw of God. So when they say God is a consuming fire, they know him as a consuming fire. That's the closest image they had of God. Does that make sense? And so it kind of serves two purposes in that he is a consuming fire if you don't do what he says, but he is a consuming fire because that's what they see of him. Yes?
It's kind of a plain statement because there you have the burning bush, yep. The fire, but it did not consume.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And over and over again, God, his image is of fire. And you see God, the presence of God as fire. And so it kind of has two things there. Verse 29 is an interesting thing that God says in that same scenario when they asked him to stop talking because we can't stand this, and God told them to go to their tents. And he says to Moses, God says to Moses in verse 29, oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it may be well with them and with their sons forever. I kind of read that as a situation where God knows what's going to happen. Oh, that they had a heart, that they would ever keep my commandments. And he knows what's going to happen. And this is an interesting phrase in verse 31, stand here by me. Moses got to stand by God. That's a pretty cool thing. Again, don't have time to go into all of that, all that ramifications, but, you know, he came down off the mountain glowing because he had been in the presence with God. 32, you shall observe to do just as the Lord your God has commanded you, and you shall not turn aside to the right or to the left. And this is a time that this phrase is used. It's used again in 17:11, 17:20, and 18:14. Or 28:14. And then Joshua says it at the beginning of the book of Joshua, Joshua 1:7, and then at the end in Joshua 23:6, where God tells Joshua in 1:7, and then Joshua tells the people at the end of the book of Joshua, don't turn from the right or the left. Don't depart from God. Any questions or anything before we go on to chapter 6? Comments? Yeah. It could have been a cloud. It could have been anything. And maybe he was a cloud in the daytime with, you know, but in that situation when giving the law, he could have used, like you're saying, something else, but he used fire because people respect fire. And God knowing us, he made us. He said, he's probably like, well, of the options I have here, I'm going to choose fire because they'll respect that. I don't know. That's assuming the mind of God in that situation, but it makes sense in that case. Deuteronomy 6. Have you heard of Deuteronomy 6, chapter 6 before? It's pretty important. It's one of the most famous passages in the book of Deuteronomy, at least this one section. And so he says, now this is the commandment and the statutes and the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you might do them. He talks about the fear of the Lord, teaching them so that you and your son and your grandson might fear the Lord your God to keep his statutes and commandments which I am commanding you all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged, that it may be well with you. Okay? Again, this concept. No. Okay, so verse 3, we have the who, what, and why. Who in verse 3 is Israel? Oh, Israel, what do they need to do? Listen and be careful to do it. Why? That it may be well with you and that you may multiply greatly, just as the Lord your God, of your fathers, has promised you in the land flowing with milk and honey. Israel, listen and do. Listen and do, that it may be well with you. Chapter 6, 4 through 9 is called the Shema. Have you heard that before? Shema. Shema o Israel is Israel, how you would say that. But it is here in the Hebrew tongue, here. Hear, O Israel. This is a very, very important passage for the Jewish people, verses 4 through 9. It is called the Shema. It is the first part of a daily prayer. They have some other passages. Part 2 is Deuteronomy 11, 13 through 21. And part 3 is Numbers 15, 37 through 41. But it is a Orthodox Jew will pray this rising up and will pray this going to bed. But this is a very important passage. And we're going to have, because of time, a basic dramatic reading of this. We don't have time to go into in depth. But he says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one, supreme truth. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might." Right out there, Psalm 119:11. "I have hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you." Psalm 119:11. "These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart." Look at how he makes this very personal. "You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit up and in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up." And so it's very personal. Faith is very personal. In 8 and 9, faith is public. "And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals or frontlets on your forehead, and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Have you ever been in a condo or somewhere and you've seen like a Hebrew something on somebody's doorpost, little silver something? That's where this comes from. That's where this comes from. Have you ever when Christ talks about enlarging the bindings on their arms and the frontals on their foreheads, they made prayer boxes and they would make leather straps to go around their arms. And if their boxes were bigger, that means they were more holy. And they would have them on their foreheads. And so that's where this comes from also. in that concept. And so the Shema is a very important passage, and due to time, we will pick up here next week. But chapter 6 of Deuteronomy in this section is a very, very important section. It really stresses the concept of passing this down to the next generation. And when do you pass it down? Basically, you take teachable moments. Anytime you can talk about God, anytime you can say, this is a great thing God has blessed us with, this is a great thing that God has done for us, what a great thing. Anytime you can talk about God is a time we need to be teaching our children to do the very same thing. That's how you pass it on from generation to generation, and that's how you make sure your grandchildren, some of you are grandparents right now, some of you grandparents can be taking those grandchildren and talking to them about these very same things. This is what God has done for us, passing that faith on to future generations. Thank you for your time this morning.